Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how are you dealing with anger in your life, with those around you? Do you bump into anger often? And what do you do about it? Well, maybe there are ways to handle it that we'll be very excited to hear about in this show, because we're going to interview the author of a book called De-Escalate, How to Calm an Angry Person in 90 Seconds or Less. That's fantastic. So this is a wonderful book. I've really gotten a lot out of it. And so I'm really happy to talk with the author, Douglas E. Noll, N-O-L-L. But we'll be friendly and say hello, Doug.
Peter, good morning.
Good morning. I'm so glad that we could talk because you bring a lot to this. Your background is quite immense. You're not only an attorney, but you're a prize-winning attorney.
Make me sound like a prize fighter.
And well, that's what being an attorney is like. And you're a mediator, and to me, that's a big deal. I love mediation, and it's really about how to talk to people. And so what I get about this is that you really understand how to communicate in ways that change the energy of the environment.
Exactly correct. And it's really about listening, how you listen and what you listen for, and then how do you respond to what you hear or what you're picking up.
And even listening to yourself, listen.
That's right. That's right.
So it's really about maintaining a peaceful center in the process of chaos around you. No matter where it is.
I was going to say, and the challenge is how to do that when you're in the middle of a storm.
By knowing better. Being mindful that you're in the middle of a storm and understanding that emotions can run away with themselves.
That's right. And that's really great for those who have spent a lot of time doing contemplative work. But for people who haven't, they are going to be unless they engage in some specific practices that I've developed, they're more likely than not going to get sucked in because they aren't mindful. But there is a way. There's a way to do this that even if you don't have training, you can stay in that center, your divine line, where everything is quiet and totally centered.
Yes, and a lot of it is because you understand the principles of emotions versus our minds and actually what runs us is not necessarily our intelligence, or let's just say what runs us is our ability to handle emotional intelligence.
That's correct.
And, you know, as a mediator, I'm sure a lot of it is how you can identify the degree of emotional intelligence that's involved in the mediation.
Well,
and
Yeah, what you find when I'm called into the types of conflicts that I typically am engaged to work with are difficult, complex, and deeply emotional, highly intractable, oftentimes involving lots of money. Could be a business conflict, a family business conflict, a corporate dispute, something like that, where relationships have really fallen apart. And what's driving that conflict are the emotions of the parties. They're angry. They're so angry that they'd almost rather shoot each other with AK-47s than sit down at the table and figure out what to do about their issues. And my job is to de-escalate them first and then engage them in a problem-solving process that will lead them to resolution. But it's the de-escalation that's the real skill here because you cannot solve an emotional problem with logic. Well, our brains just aren't capable of doing that. So we have
It's amazing to know that.
It not only the science, of course, supports that because all of my work is based on science, but it's also common sense if we really think about it. You know, we're 98% emotional and 2% rational as human beings. We have, even now, people now use the term bounded rationality when looking at human rationality. And we are far less rational than we think we are. Everything we do is driven by emotions, including thinking. How would you know when to apply rational thinking to a problem unless you were emotional about it first? Because emotions make us pay attention to our environment. They alert us to problems that need to be solved. And we couldn't even begin to be rational unless we had an emotional reaction first.
I think we're in a situation now in our country where we're being driven to be irrational because there's nothing rational going on.
Well, I agree that there's a lot of emotionality that is going on within government, and a lot of people are making decisions based on what makes them feel good, as opposed to doing the harder system 2 level of thinking, which requires linear thinking, problem solving, applications of rules of logic, and that sorts of thing. It's much easier.
Let's look at empathy, because I think that it takes a rational mind, it takes a de-escalated mind to be able to listen and to hear in the larger context that
I wouldn't say that it takes a rational mind, but I certainly would say that it takes a de-escalated mind. Very difficult to de-escalate somebody else when you're escalated. It can be done, and I've done it, but it is really, really, really hard. It takes enormous discipline. But if you're calm and you can listen to somebody who's really escalated or angry, and maintain your calm by focusing on the other person's emotions and ignoring their words, then you can stay calm yourself, and you can literally calm down the emotional centers of that person's brain in 90 seconds or less. The brains are hardwired for this. They'll respond automatically.
Right. So the key is really to focus on what people are emoting rather than what they're saying.
Exactly. And that is radically simple idea, but it's also so counterintuitive and so countercultural to what we think we have to be listening to.
Right. We're trying to problem solve the words rather than problem solve the emotions.
Exactly.
And so the idea is to listen to the emotions and guess what emotions are being exhibited so that we can then respond to the person in a way, what you call effect labeling, saying, oh, I see that you're angry. Oh, you feel really anxious.
There you go.
You know, you're very frustrated.
Yes.
And people, that's what they want to hear.
Well, what's amazing is they don't even know what they want. All they know is that they're experiencing this emotion. And what we know from brain scanning studies done by Matthew Lieberman, a neuroscientist at UCLA who did studies on all of this in 2007, that when we label somebody else's emotions, we guess at them and then we just simply reflect them back, just in the way that you did, you're angry, you're frustrated, that we're literally lending our prefrontal cortex to the speaker because their prefrontal cortex is offline. And we're helping them process their own emotional experience in a way that they can't process it themselves. And that's what causes everything to quiet down. But it's very important that when this is done, that it's a you statement. If you use an I statement, if you say something like, what I think you're feeling is anger, that won't work. And Lieberman showed that it doesn't work. You have to use a direct you statement. You are angry, you are frustrated, you are sad, grief-stricken, whatever it might be. The moment you interject an I, the whole thing falls apart. And if you just go out and experiment with this, people should go out and just try it. Try using you statements and trying I statements and see. Watch the difference. You'll see it for yourselves. It's very obvious.
That's huge, because when you come from I, you're coming from a subjective viewpoint.
Correct.
But when you just go say you, then you're being objective.
And when people often push back at me with this skill and say, well, what if I'm wrong? And I say, it doesn't matter if you're wrong. You could say, oh, you're really angry, Peter. And you would come back and say, I'm not angry, I'm just frustrated. Oh, Peter, you're really frustrated. So the speaker will immediately correct you because now they're processing. You reflect back what the correction is, and they say, yeah, I'm really frustrated. Beautiful, you just nailed it. So you're never wrong when you do this. Never wrong.
But it's important to repeat it back to them.
Yes.
So that they feel heard.
That's right. It's a deep validation. But none of this is happening at what we would call the rational or even conscious level. This is what we're doing is working with unconscious processes in the brain that we normally can't access. And by using the language of emotion, we are helping these pre-conscious parts of the brain that operate outside of our awareness. We're helping them process information to calm down.
Right, and that unconscious thinking is shouting to be heard in
That's
the emotion.
Right. That's right. In fact, it's such a loud shout that I call it listening people into existence. You're literally listening a person into existence.
Oh,
where they've never
that.
Really been deeply heard or felt like they've been listened to before.
It gives them form that they all of a sudden have that they can
exactly.
work with.
That's a beautiful way of putting it, because one of the difficulties that we have in developing emotional intelligence or any kind of higher level of thinking is being able to concretize all the stuff that's going on in their brains into consciousness in a way that allows us to manipulate it. And that's a process known as emotional categorization and emotional granularization. And without that, all we have are the physiological reactions without a way of bringing it into consciousness and working with it. So when people get emotional, that's what happens. They lose all of that. Many people do. And so when we are able to reflect back the emotional experience that a person is having, we're helping them categorize and granularize their experience, bring it into consciousness where they can work with it, and that immediately calms everything down. It's like a panic button gets turned off.
Yeah, that's wonderful, because there's so many situations that all it's needed is to listen to the feelings that are being expressed, not the words.
That's right.
But how the words are coming out through feelings, and then addressing the feelings rather than not even addressing the words at all, because the feelings need to be helped first.
That's exactly correct. And this works with 2-year-olds. It works with 90-year-olds. It works with it works with any human brain, because the human brain is hardwired to absorb this information in this way.
But let's just watch how people do this. They try to deny the emotions that they're hearing from
That's
others
right.
and repress them and say, you know, stop being emotional or whatever, you know.
Right. That's called emotional invalidation. And it's the way that we have learned culturally to deal with the emotions of others in order to soothe our own anxiety around that emotional experience. Because when other people are really angry or emotional or really upset, it makes us feel anxious because we don't know what's going to happen next. And so all we want them to do is we want to push them away. Go away, go away, go. Get those emotions out of here. They're making me uncomfortable.
Right, let's talk about the words.
Exactly. And, of course, we're not taught emotional competency, as we should be as children, because our parents didn't know how to do it, and our teachers don't know how to do it. And so, as a result, just this incompetency has been perpetuated generation to generation to generation. Well, now we have the knowledge. This is all brand new. I mean, this very recent knowledge about how all of this works. So now we have the ability to teach people how to be emotionally competent in the face of somebody who's insulting them and disrespecting them and spitting on them, and maintain total equanimity, never get upset, and get that person calmed down quickly, and then decide whether or not problem solving is in order.
Well, see, but the thing about effective labeling is that you have found labels. You know, you've identified labels that you
right.
put in the book that you use in these situations that allow us to use them to address to people. And
yes.
and so you have different layers of
right.
of how the emotions are addressed.
Right. So those layers, I mean, this is cultural. So this book is written really with a Western, really a North American, European orientation, because if we went to a different culture, if we went to Tahiti, we would have different kinds of layers. Emotions are culturally derived from hardwired physiological things that happen in the brain, but how each culture looks at emotions and names them and varies. But
and
here,
I guess you've had to learn a lot about that in your mediation because often you're mediating with people from different cultures.
That's right. I mean, I've mediated cases where I was the only English speaker in the room. One time I was the only listener in the room. They were all deaf people. And the deaf people have all completely different culture than we have, even though they're, live and have been raised in the Western culture. They have a very different way of doing things. And thinking about things, so we become culturally sensitive. But once you understand the basic formula, then learning the layers of any given culture is not difficult. In Western culture, the layers go anger at the top, anger and frustration at the top, and then under that are kind of dignitary things like disrespect, unfairness, not being listened to, not being supported, not really emotions, but close to it. Underneath that, typically would be fear and anxiety.
And what they create is what's next.
Pardon me?
What they create is what's next.
That's
disrespect creates anxiety, fear, etc.
That's right. Or actually, you'll see as we go through the layers, that most of the time it starts at the bottom. Under fear and anxiety is shame and guilt. Underneath shame and guilt is sadness and grief. And then we get to the core of it all, which is loneliness or existential belief that I'm unlovable and all alone in the universe, and nobody loves me, and I'm completely and totally abandoned, which is
and
a really extreme experience for a human being. But
right.
I find that a lot of anger at the top is driven by that existential emptiness at the bottom.
Yes, that's so terrific. But this is what's important for our audience to understand in using this. So, because we have to have a language about it,
right,
and understand the unfolding of it, so that when you're dealing with angry people, you can understand what layer you're looking at, and what might underlie it all.
That's right. And once you start learning practicing this, and it's a very simple practice to begin with. Once you start practicing, you will see the layers unfold, and all of a sudden, the mystery over emotions will be lifted off. And instead of seeing chaos and drama and craziness, what you'll see is, oh, this person's really emotional right now. How do I choose to respond to that? I can walk away. I can resist, defend, or I can de-escalate. I have many choices in front of me, and de-escalation is just one of my choices.
Right.
The way that I tell people to practice this is not to do it in intense situations in the beginning, but you start in very low-risk social situations, like a Starbucks barista. You know, you get a cup of coffee or a cappuccino in the morning at your local coffee place and look at the person there and just say something like, you're really happy today. And watch what happens when you do that. They will completely light up, and you've just made their whole day just by saying something simple like that. And just practice that kind of thing for a couple of weeks until you get used to it. And then you can start, as you gain confidence that this stuff really works, you can start taking on more difficult problems.
Or you could say, you look very relaxed.
Yeah, absolutely. You seem very relaxed this morning.
Yeah.
You look very rested.
Yeah.
Whatever it is that you pick up from them, that you just intuitively pick up from their energy fields or from reading their eyes, whatever emotions you pick up, you guess at it and you just reflect it back and watch what happens.
Yeah. That opens up a whole new world of,
it does.
Of creating positive relationships.
It does. It's incredibly powerful.
What fun. Aren't you married to an amazing woman?
I am. I am so blessed. Yes, my wife, Alea Dow, is a very deep and powerful spiritual teacher and practitioner, and she is a force of the universe unto herself.
Right. Ask her how she enjoyed being on my show.
I will.
I don't know if you knew that she was on it.
I didn't know that she was. I seem to be following her around. Because, the book was released last week, so as you know, you're doing lots of conversation with interesting people, but I seem to track through the snow that she's trod in front of me and said, oh, you were married to Alea. I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, I am.
Yeah. Well, I have a wife like that. They say, oh, you're married to her? Then you must be okay.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, for people who are listening, just so you know, I mean, Elaine and I have been together for over 12 years. We've been married for 10, and we have never had a bitter argument. Never. Whoops. You know, I got... Who's calling me? Oh, well, it doesn't matter. We have never had a bitter argument. We use our tools, my tools and her tools, and we just don't get angry at each other. We'll get frustrated, and we will get angry, but not at each other. And as soon as we pick up that one of us is being emotional, we affect label. Oh, you're really frustrated. In fact, last night, we were just sitting around having a glass of wine, and we both had pretty long days yesterday, and she said, I'm really tired. And I said, oh, love, you're really, really tired. You're really wiped out. And, you know, I'm really tired. Just like that. It's just part of our normal vocabulary.
That's something that has to be created, though.
Absolutely correct. This is intentional practice that you have to consciously engage in. You have to learn the skill, master it, and then make it a part of who you are, so that it becomes an intentional practice that when you hear emotion, you automatically respond to it with an emotional reflection, not anything else.
Right. And you have a number of different ways of reflective listening, mirroring, paraphrasing, core messaging, and summarizing, using metaphors.
Right. That where people really get hung up on this reflection stuff is by it really kind of started with Carl Rogers, who was the great mid 20th century humanist psychologist, kind of the beginning of the positive psychology movement, and he was getting great results with his patients in psychotherapy because he was creating an empathic connection with them, and when they felt deeply listened to, they were able to process whatever it was that was disturbing them and heal. Well, Carl was not a scholar. He wrote a lot of beautiful books, but he was not a scholar, and people didn't understand what he was doing, and they took from him the wrong stuff. And that's how we got into these I statements around reflective listening and the idea of mirroring, repeating back the words. And these levels of reflection are important tools, but we have to understand when it's appropriate to use them. So, for example, mirroring, the kind of reflection where I would repeat back exactly what you would say, is only appropriate for procedures and rules. For example, I'm a pilot, and if I get a clearance from air traffic control, I have to read back that clearance verbatim so the controller knows that I have the right clearance and right instructions. That's mirroring. Very important in that situation because safety is at stake. Paraphrasing is useful when the words are important, and I need to understand, let the listener know that I understand the words that he or she has said. And core messaging is used for people who are not sure what they're trying to express something, but they can't quite get it out. And you can listen to them in a certain way, understand the core message of what they're trying to say, give them the core message, and they totally relieve. Oh God, you get it. And then finally, at the deepest level, we have emotions. So when people are really, really emotional, angry or upset or even happy and joyous, we ignore the words because that's not what's important right now. What's important is the emotional experience. And we reflect back the emotions rather than the words. So having all these tools becomes critically important in relationships and knowing when to use the tools appropriately in what circumstance.
It's very powerful. It's the beginning. The de-escalation is to get to a place where you can have an intelligent communication.
That's exactly correct. Where you can solve problems that otherwise couldn't be solved because people are so upset that they just can't function. They can't function in a way that's constructive and cooperative and collaborative. But once you get them de-escalated, now you can engage them in that kind of process. I use this all the time in my mediation practice. And I might have to de-escalate people 20, 30 times a day. They get them calmed down because you get them de-escalated and then you get moving to problem solving and something gets them triggered and man, they riled up again. So now, okay, de-escalate. And the de-escalation takes 30 seconds. So it's not like it's a huge time-consuming thing. It's very fast.
Calm them down. Just have to get that you understand their emotions so that they can get beyond their emotions and get back to talking about the
information. And the other thing, that it gives the listener a sense of patience and compassion for somebody who's having an emotional experience, because now it's no longer anxiety-producing. It's no longer interfering with process. It is process. And so you just simply, okay, got to calm down. Here we go. You know, it's not a big deal.
Right. Well, there's a lot in the book about teenagers. And
yes.
I think a lot of people, we struggled with our teenagers, and it worked out. But we didn't have your book at the time. And, it worked out fine in the end. Now they're both in their 30s.
But that was a pretty rough 12 years.
Yes. The teenage years were very rough. And to have this book, De-Escalate, is so valuable for parents and anybody in any family relationship.
Right. Here's the thing about the thing that we forget about children. From the time of birth up until they're 26 or 27 years old, during that whole time, 25 years, their brains are growing and changing and evolving and maturing. And the only way that they become competent adults is by their brains experiencing a whole bunch of different stuff. So let's take a two-year-old, for example. From about 18 months to about 4 years old, the emotional centers of the child's brain are starting to come online. The neural connections are starting to be made. The only way that child starts learning about emotions and figures it all out is by experiencing every emotion under the sun. And that's why a two-year-old in one moment can be in joyous, giddy happiness and the next moment be in total rage. Because the brain, all this stuff is firing, and the child is trying to make sense of what all these emotional experiences are. The worst thing we can do to a two-year-old is to say, don't cry, grow up, be a man, be a woman. Don't, all that emotional invalidation is counterproductive to allowing a child's brain to develop and evolve appropriately with emotions. And what you do with that two-year-old turns out to be what happens to a 14-year-old. Because it's in the teens, the brain is going through another major metamorphosis. And again, the emotional centers are now enriching and deepening. But if the kid has no emotional experience that's positive as a two-year-old, as a 15-year-old, he or she's a train wreck.
And but I can see with little kids mirroring back their emotions to them that you get it about that. So you're very angry right now.
Yes.
Then they go, oh, I guess it works that I'm seeing now.
Yes. You can take a two-year-old who's having a blowout tantrum and calm them down in about 35 seconds, 40 seconds.
Wow.
By reflecting back their emotional experience.
Right. We're getting to the end of the show, and I want to remind everybody who I'm speaking with, Douglas Knoll, N-O-L-L, and your book is De-Escalate. And... is there a website or a way to connect?
The book is available, and it's published by Beyond Words, Simon & Schuster. It's available everywhere. But I have a special offer for people if they want to. They can get, if they're willing to pay $7 for shipping and handling, I can buy the book for them and ship it to them. And if they want to take up that offer, just go to my website, Doug, D-O-U-G, Noel, N-O-L-L, .com. And there's a banner there. Click on the banner and go from there. And if you don't want to do that, the book is available in Audible. My beautiful wife narrated the book. So it's available with her voice in Audible format, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the usual places.
That's great. Doug Knoll, thanks so much for being
here. Peter, it's been great talking
to
you.
It's wonderful. And I hope everybody goes out and gets this book or goes online and gets this book it's extremely helpful.
Yeah, I do too. Not because I want to sell a lot of books, because you don't make a lot of money selling books, but what I want to do is enlist as many people as possible to calm down this angry world. And we can do it with these techniques.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Okay, Peter.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.